differ somewhat, depending on the company you're looking at or the industry it operates in. We're going to touch on the four areas you see on slide 15. So we begin with an assessment of the industry dynamics and this competitive framework, the opportunities that we see for the company to either grow market share, expand margins, and have a competitive advantage that enables them to do that is where we spend a lot of our time and incorporate a significant amount of our industry insights based on our experience, as well as, a network across the industries that we're researching. Another area that we focus on will be scrutinizing the financials. So this involves more than just understanding earnings per share, income statement at a high level. It's understanding the accounting that goes into what shows up on each of the financial statements, and then combining that with assessment of what the price currently implies about the stock and its future versus what we believe is a much more likely outcome that will ultimately drive outperformance. And a couple other parts of that include what we call latent assets and latent liabilities. These could be things that are not necessarily represented on the balance sheet, but would contribute to reinforcing what we see as opportunities. So it could be everything from something like company culture to, on the flip side, liabilities that we have to be comfortable with that would, potentially derail or pose a risk to the investment thesis. And then, another key part of this is evaluating management. This includes everything from assessing their track record, having conversations with management to hear what their, hypothesis or thesis is for investing in the company. But importantly, throughout this process, validating, our view, what management's saying, across the entire supply chain. So talking to, as I mentioned, people in our own network that would represent everything from suppliers to customers and distributors in between. And what I thought I would do is,
a quick question. Given the very rigorous process that you go through for each stock and the amount of detailed analysis, you have a very, you have a more concentrated portfolio than others. Could you talk us through the discussion for either a sell or an add to the portfolio, and how the competition for capital within the portfolio works?
Sure. I'll address that quickly or concisely here, and then we can come back and see if there are any questions after putting an example together with the answer. I think it'd be most helpful. But in terms of, as you mentioned, yes, it is a more concentrated portfolio given the amount of research that we put into a stock and what we focus on with regards to the company's competitive advantage over time. It also translates into a lower turnover portfolio than what you would see, typically across the industry, definitely much lower than Kramer, who has 30 ideas a night. We have about 20 or 25% turnover, which implies about a 4 to 5 year holding period for investments. Doesn't mean all of them hit that, but on average, that's how it works out. And we do have a process that, it caps out in terms of number of names in the portfolio. So even if we continue to like a stock that we think it has a sufficient upside relative to the risk it's adding to the portfolio, we'll continue to own it. But if we find something that we believe is better, that will result in crowding out existing holding, which is most often why we would sell a stock. The other reason we would most often sell a stock or we would sell a stock is, something that we identified early on. As I mentioned, we evaluate the upside that we see, the case for that upside, as well as the risk that are posed to fulfilling that. And if one of those risks were to materialize, then that would result in an immediate sell of that security. I think the steps of how this works in practice, it could be helpful. I'll talk about sizing and then anything else that I hadn't addressed on that question.
Thank you.
But if you, Think about when a stock shows up on the screen. It's either myself or someone else on the team that will identify a company from the screen that we want to do deeper research on. And ultimately, I think we ultimately want to propose to the full team. Their finished product includes a write-up and a supporting financial model and analysis. But the first step of that process is sending out an email to the team, identifying we're writing up a company. In this case, I'm going to talk about a company based out of Boston called Integrys, which is a information technology company in the semiconductor supply chain. When I send out that email or someone else sends it out, it has a couple of purposes, one of which is if anybody's worked with that management team just says, hey, this is not worth spending your time on, no matter what the valuation is, you don't want to work or invest with that management team, then you know, that has a lot of benefits, saving everyone time. It doesn't happen that often, but clearly it's got a benefit if it does happen. The other is so that other individuals can start identifying key questions they have, perhaps people in their own networks that could be beneficial for the research process. And then I'll dig into the areas I've mentioned on here, focused with the research focused around what we believe is shaping the current price and the perspective of the street or other investors versus what we believe is likely to materialize and not really reflect in today's valuation. So as I mentioned, a company called Integrys was a name that is a name that we own in the portfolio when it came through the screen. Given background in technology, it was something that I had familiarity with. And just to kind of help follow along with a company like Integrys, if you think about all the electronics that you have, or computer chips that are also in not just your phone or your computers or your televisions, but also your cars, increasingly these days, various types of industrial automation or even, home appliance automation. All of those chips are built on what's called wafers, and the basic building block of on those chips is called a transistor. So while everybody these days seems to be familiar with companies like Intel or Apple or Samsung or increasingly a company like NVIDIA or TSMC, Integrys plays a very important role in ensuring that what is designed to go into these products, is actually high quality and protects the economics for everybody involved in that supply chain. And to give you a sense of what I mean by that is before a chip can be manufactured, they have to be built in what's called a fab manufacturing, is equivalent of an operating room. Essentially, you can think about it that way. And these environments have to be so clean that it prevents a single particle that's smaller than a virus from ruining what otherwise would be a wafer worth tens of thousands of dollars. And I mentioned operating room, and that's because in an operating room where you're going to have heart surgery, it's 1,000 times dirtier, or a fab is 1,000 times, a clean room in a fab is 1,000 times cleaner, has to be 1,000 times cleaner. And that's where Integrys plays a key role. They provide filtration systems, the filters that have to be continuously changed to ensure the air quality and chemicals or fluids flowing through that fab are not providing contaminants or posing contaminants, as well as something called slurry. So you think about the slurry as these chemicals that are utilized similar to waxing or polishing a car to make sure that the surface of the wafer itself is, as clean as and fine as it can be. And importantly, the way chips are made today is they're stacked on, the logic's stacked on top of each other increasingly. So at each stage of that process, you have to use more of Integrys's slurry or chemicals. And when we were looking at the stock, the street was punishing Integrys like it would other companies that only sell equipment into manufacturing of, or the fabs used to manufacture the chips. without really appreciating the fact that, one, most of their revenue model is more on the recurring side, so it's more like selling the razor blades over and over, as well as chips become more advanced, the size of the transistor is smaller, the number of layers being built is higher, so there's more content sold by Entegris as utilized in this process. So as we dug into validating our thesis and talking across the supply chain, particularly to folks at a company like Intel or TSMC, we gained increased confidence that Entegris was going to benefit. No matter if wafer growth grew at all, they would get more every year because of the need for more of their product per wafer built, as well as once their product is selected in the manufacturing process, it's a long-term advantage that they have versus any potential competition. So again, as I mentioned, at the end of the day, this will come through as a research report. We get in a room, we have a raucous debate about the merits of the investment idea, as well as the risk posed. At the end of that raucous debate, if there are any questions that need to be followed up, we'll do that in a timely fashion. And then we'll take a vote, and 80% or more of the team has to be in support of the stock idea in order for, again, the portfolio. And then tying it back to the question asked in terms of when we buy it, a new stock, we'll typically take it on at a 1.5% to 2.5% position weight, and that's dependent upon
Chris,
the level
of conviction.
Don
has a question.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, this is Charlton, and sorry if our connection's a little unstable. One thing I wanted to ask about was that compared to other companies, you do have a different style of what industries you have. And I noticed that historically you were pretty heavy on the industrial side, and recently I believe that has changed. I was wondering if you could speak to kind of both why your strategy operates the way it does with that stylistic difference, and if you see that as an advantage, and then what goes into those kind of bigger changes when you do make them?
Sure. And I think part of this is tied to the risk model that we do use and the conversation we could have about that. But fundamentally, the sector overweights or underweights we have is, it's not a top-down decision. It's just a reflection of where we're finding more attractive opportunities at any given time. So industrials at this point does remain an area where we have found more of those opportunities. Therefore, it reflects an overweight within the portfolio. Technology is another example. While we have underweights to areas like consumer and utilities, where we've just found it much more difficult to find utilities that are misunderstood and mispriced to a degree that would give us the upside that we can find elsewhere.
Yeah, and I would also add to that those sector-wise, they change slowly. So we mentioned that we're holding names on average for about 4 to 5 years. So you're really not going to see big changes from quarter to quarter. If you were to kind of line it up year to year, you could kind of see some slow movements. But it doesn't change very dramatically. It's name by name.
Okay.
Wait, did you say that there are thresholds to those overweights or underweights? Or no?
Yeah, there are thresholds, and that's the last thing I'm going to talk about. I know we're kind of getting close on time. We have a risk model that we've developed, and one of the input factors into the risk model is our overweight or underweight to the different economic sectors. So there's guardrails on it, but the beauty of it is the reason that we did it was because a lot of times people want to take every risk factor and put guardrails on each individual risk factor. And what happens is if you do that, then when you look at the total portfolio, it starts to look just more and more like the benchmark. And what we wanted to do was say, hey, let's take all the risk factors, let's blend them together. And when we blend them together, can we still manage the downside risk and but be able to express ourselves in terms of if we do want to have an overweight to industrials, right? Or if we do want to have no holdings in communication services, we can do that because communication services is a small sector, right? But generally speaking, you're not going to see us more than 2 to 2.5 times a sector weighting.
Thank you.
Chris, you want to maybe wrap up the fundamental piece once the name's voted and size the position?
Yeah, so in terms of sizing, I would also add that we think about risk at multiple levels, the first of which is not overpaying for security and ensuring that we do understand the opportunity on the upside versus risk on the downside at the security level. And then the risk model itself at the portfolio level does play a role, a modest role in the weighting initially or as we own stocks. So 1.5 to 2.5 would be the target weight for each initial new holding, subject to how much upside we see for that company relative to how much incremental risk it's either adding or reducing at the portfolio level. So we have for each stock, we understand how much risk it's adding or subtracting, and then we can weigh that in terms of the decision. But at the end of this process, on an ongoing basis, we already have a portfolio built, but you can think about it as each stock that's in the portfolio has gone through that rigorous fundamental review, can be combined together at the portfolio level to ensure that the risk in the portfolio is minimizing that risk of significant downside. And then, we talked about the relative weights, both on a, on an industry basis. But that's, again, an outgrowth of that individual process. And then the performance you've seen over time is, driven by sticking to that process and continuing to implement it to manage results over long periods of time that deliver 100%+ of or capture 100%+ of upside within the relative benchmark, but also importantly, only has about 90% downside capture. I don't know if you were talking about the performance impact.
Yeah, the last page I'll go to is page 16, and I think this graphically displays how we think about risk. It looks like we have another question. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, it seems like your cutting edge advantage is your ability to go technically very deep, with that kind of domain practitioner knowledge, and kind of understanding the different technical layers and how they can give rise to those opportunities. How do you balance kind of restraint in diving in too deep at the expense of other uses of time and how, it can be a two-edged sword, I guess.
Yeah. No, good question. And here's what we've done. And there's a couple things. What I would highlight is that what you're identifying is kind of a natural human flaw, right? And there's a couple things where we have a process in place to address that. And we hire people that have the ability to go deep based on the industry where they have experience. But when someone champions a name and brings it to the broader team, that research report gets shared with everyone on the team. So people that come from different industries, right? And then that name gets debated amongst the team. So you're dealing with people that understand investments and understand how businesses run, but might not have the expertise of, driving deep into that particular industry. And then when those debates are over, everyone puts down their pencil and there's a vote that's taken. And we say, hey, we have to get at least 80% of the room saying this is a name that we think can deliver alpha in the portfolio. So if someone goes too deep and too technical and they're missing the big picture because they've gone so deep, there's always someone else that's looking at it from a higher viewpoint and saying, hey, that doesn't make sense. I'll give you a quick example. We had someone within the technology space that identified, and it wasn't Chris. I'm not picking on Chris. Another coverage on the technology side. And they had identified a technology that was A really neat technology, and kind of, hey, you could tell that it would take market share and change the way things were done, particularly within the auto space, right? And we had another person on the team that had, you know, quite a bit of experience within the auto manufacturing space. So when it came up, that individual used their network, or we call it their neural network, to go and talk to people within the auto industry, a couple of the bigger players, and say, hey, what do you think about this technology? And they all admitted that it was a great technology, but that it wasn't going to get implemented until like 3 or 4 years later. And so once that was kind of brought to light, then the rest of the team saw it. And when it came to voting, people didn't vote for it, and it didn't make it into the portfolio, which ended up being the right decision. So there are some counters to the idea of having people that can go deep as an industry practitioner, but also everyone on the team is an analyst. Everyone, you know, has either gotten their MBA or their CFA or whatever the case may be. And that's what we're trying to do, is combine the two to try to get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I would add just is that, you know, we hone in on what ultimately matters as material for the stocks. In the case of Integris, it was being priced as if they would just grow along with wafer growth or CapEx. But we saw the opportunity for the company to grow much faster because of this layering of their solutions per wafer. So instead of 2 times, they were getting 4 times going forward. But we'll do that with every company in any industry. In the consumer space, it could be about, you know, the business model for the restaurant itself and whether or not they're buying supplies from someone else, you know, fries after they're already packaged and cut, or they're doing it themselves. And, I just bring that up as lots of stocks are reflecting what's known at the surface, and we're looking for the, you know, just below the surface at what's material and misunderstood.
Got it. Yeah,
okay. Listen, we're at time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Take a minute or two to wrap this up. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll wrap it up right now. Okay. In fact, if you, we have a risk model that's very focused on protecting on the downside. When you look at this portfolio in terms of its upside and downside capture over time, when markets have been up, it's been up 103%. So it's been able to hold on and slightly outproduce in terms of alpha. And then in down markets, the downside capture is around 91. So it's been able to protect in down markets. So we want a portfolio that's going to get you returns over time and really protect in down markets. It speaks a little bit to the quality of the portfolio in terms of companies that have good earnings and tend to do better when the markets are pulling back. And then I'll just land on page 18, which just shows performance over different periods of time. I know we wouldn't be talking to you if there wasn't good performance to begin with, but it's been very consistent over time as well. So with that, I will open it up for any questions that anybody has. And if there's no questions, the last page, we'll have to say this, or Chris and I'll get beat up around the office, is page 20. Literally everyone at Earnest Partners, we're not some huge, massive firm. We're a boutique investment firm where every single person at Earnest Partners knows that we're talking to you today. I think if you gave us a chance, we would do a good job. And obviously we're available and around. If there's any follow-up questions, we're available.
All right. Thank you very much. Callan will be in touch. We appreciate your time, and have a great day. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay. We are down 2 people. I am disinclined to make a decision, to have a discussion now. This is the longest meeting by an hour that I've chaired in 8 years. By at least an hour. I don't know whether we need to have that discussion now or not. I'm disinclined because we're down two members, but if the committee feels like we should have that discussion now, we can go ahead. I appreciate that everything is fresh in your minds. I don't know if anybody's got feelings one way or another about who we ought to select. Dawn?
I was just going to tell you
I agree with you. I think we should hold off on a decision.
And I was just going to say that with Sylvia and Terry both leaving the meeting early, I intend to send everybody a copy of the recording so that they can review it for the next meeting.
Okay, then let's do this at the August meeting. Okay. We have two administrative items. Are you prepared to talk about them, Dawn?
Yes.
Okay. What is the update on the pension administrator?
Well, what I have is just that I wanted to let you guys know that Lisa retired June 18th.
Wow.
So our new interim pension administrator is Kim Swanberg, who is not here today because she had time off approved long before she became our administrator. But she did include a memo introducing herself in the packet.
Okay. Anything else on that topic?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
When I spoke with Kim about this, she also mentioned that this would give the board an opportunity to ask Angel if there are any plans in place yet for making a permanent administrator appointment.
Okay. All right. Angel, are you able to address that issue today?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. Hi, everyone. We are opening the position up for recruitment. We're waiting for the HR department to get with us to get all the information so we could open that recruitment, as we do with all other positions.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the update. Any questions about that? All right. Dawn, can you speak to the disability audit update, please?
Yep, this is just a quick update. Every year we send out an affidavit for disability retirees who have not met normal retirement requirements yet. This year we sent the affidavit out to 14 people. We did get a response from all 14 and are not requesting to suspend any benefits this year.
This may be the first year in my 8 that we heard from everybody.
First year in my 11, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Good news. Glad to hear it. Okay. The last item on our agenda is our call to the audience. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to address the board? Hearing from no one. I will entertain a motion to adjourn unless anybody has any other business. Anybody on the board have anything they need to raise?
No.
Okay. All right.
I motion to adjourn.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Would you call the vote, please?
Angel Isamellum?
Aye.
Terry Train? Dave Samer?
Aye.
Tarleton Farron?
Aye.
Sylvia Amparano? John O'Hare?
Aye.
Mark Rubin?
Aye. All right, thank you, everybody. We will see you in August, and we will have a meeting in August. Any thoughts that maybe we wouldn't, we will. So we'll see you then. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye, everybody. Bye.